Hey listeners, it's your host, Aisha. So in this episode of Classical Classroom, you are going to learn all about a kind of music that I actually kind of grew up with, video game music. It was pretty much on in my house from the time that my brother was in diapers, which I actually have a picture of, which I'll post with this episode, which he'll kill me for. Also look for that on our social media. Sorry, Adam. But since I was a kid, video game music has become a whole different beast. Video games have soundtracks. Symphony orchestras play them. And so in this episode, we're going to focus on the music of Final Fantasy. Basically, this episode is going to be a nerdtastic extravaganza. So don't forget to subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes because it will help us level up. Sorry. Okay, I'm done. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is Leslie Sable and Joshua Zinn. Our Leslie Sable and Joshua Zinn. So Leslie Sable is the director of popular programming at the Houston Symphony. She was previously general manager of the Modesto Symphony Orchestra and the orchestra librarian at the Sacramento Philharmonic. I'm also a librarian.
I was also operations manager there, too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
So I did a lot of things.
The Googles, they lie sometimes. And Joshua Zinn is a composer who moonlights as an announcer and content producer here at Houston Public Media. Among many things, he's the co-producer and host of our show, Music in the Making. More importantly, Josh is a self-avowed media nerd, and he is our in-house expert on today's topic, which is, Josh?
Final Fantasy music.
Nice. Okay, so before we get into talking about the music of Final Fantasy, I think we need to say a little bit about the mythology of Final Fantasy itself. So can you kind of give us some background, tell us the story?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
The year was 1987. The video game industry was on fire. Nintendo led the charge with the side-scrolling wonder, Super Mario Brothers. But then, from an unlikely developer on the verge of bankruptcy, came a new adventure. Final Fantasy emerged, changing the gaming world forever. It had everything. Magic, combat, dragons, monsters, swords, airships, kings, queens, alternate dimensions. Every fantasy trope gamers could imagine. Each Final Fantasy game is a self-contained, choose-your-own-adventure story on steroids. 14 installments, and almost 30 years later, Final Fantasy remains one of the most beloved RPGs in the canon.
So thanks, Josh. That was a little weird. So Leslie, can you say a little bit about what popular programming is at Houston Symphony?
Yes. So I'm in charge of basically almost everything that isn't your hardcore classical. So okay. We have a Pops series, which is a 9-concert weekend series. And then we also do one-off specials. So that means bringing in Smokey Robinson or Earth, Wind & Fire or Ben Folds for one night only.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important to an organization that their sort of mission is about classical music? Why is this kind of programming important to them?
Well, our musicians are extremely versatile, and doing pops, we get to explore other genres of music like pop music, rock music, Broadway, soundtracks, jazz, country, bluegrass, all genres of music the orchestra can play and plays very, very well. So we think it's important to bring that music to our audiences in Houston to just showcase the variety that's out there and that an orchestra isn't just about classical music, as I'm using air quotes, classical music.
Yeah. Well, and can you talk about the different audiences that the this kind of music draws as opposed to your typical classical performance?
Yes. So our Pops concerts are a little more, I would say, accessible to just a mainstream audience goer, say, who really loves classic rock. We did the music of David Bowie a couple weekends ago.
Nice.
So it was a tribute to his great catalog, and we did about 20 of his greatest hits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were people there that had painted their faces like David Bowie. They were dressed up. They
had a
great time. Yeah. There was dancing. There was screaming. There were, you know, people shouting out songs they wanted to hear from the audience.
No
it was
way.
Really kind of like a rock concert. And, you know, we have full-blown lighting and hazers. And it's just a really, really fun time. But, you know, playing really great music that just doesn't happen to be of the classical repertoire.
Do you find that those kinds of concerts bring, like, did those audiences begin to bleed over into your more traditional, like when somebody goes out and sees something like that and they're impressed by what an orchestra can do, do you find that those people start coming to a symphony concert?
I think when Pops was first created,
yeah,
that was the goal, I think,
yeah,
was this was your starter, your introduction.
Okay, like your training wheels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we've found over the years that that's just not the case. It's just a different, I hate to use this term because, you know, it's an art, but it's a different product line. It's,
yeah,
it's,
no, that
we're
makes
in a
sense.
Business and it is a different product line that we have. Mm-hmm. And this audience is very, very loyal to what they like, which is Pops. And say our tagline is the music you know, the music you love.
So that brings me to an important question for this show. Why Final Fantasy? Like, what makes that a good series for the symphony?
So we've been doing video game concerts, I think, since 2006. We started with Video Games Live, which our audiences will know. We've had them back about three times, I believe. But they, I think, were the ones who really started this whole genre.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been cultivating that audience for, you know, 10 years, and we find that the music is good. It's really good. And it's the audience for these shows is none that I've ever seen before in my life. In fact, when I came to interview here the summer of 2011, it happened to be a Final Fantasy weekend. Uh-huh. And I had never experienced one of these shows before in my career. And I could not believe how well-behaved the audience was. I mean, I didn't know what to expect, but everyone was dressed up. Everyone was so excited.
Wait, when you say dressed up, were they like in costume?
Yes. Nice. Yes. And they were so appreciative and just sitting there, their attention was glued to the orchestra and to the screens and
so
everything.
Great.
And it was amazing. And since I've been here, every single time we have a video game show, it's the same.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's great people watching, but it's also wonderful to see them appreciative of the orchestra and what they're able to do.
I want to talk a little about the evolution of video game music. So like, video games have been around since Pong, but it's a pretty recent thing that they've, you know, become such elaborate productions that they actually have their own soundtracks. Josh, can you say a little about when this became an industry of its own?
Well, obviously with the growth of video games comes the growth of technology, because that's what video games are entirely based out of. So when you think of things like Pong, and you imagine Pong in your head, if you've ever played it or you've ever seen it played, you have those little boop, boop, like all these, like these weird digitized sounds. And that was all that those machines were capable of. And so the same thing goes for the kind of music that you could produce. So if anybody's familiar with, you know, old-fashioned Nintendo Entertainment System music, Super Mario Brothers, that digitized 8-bit sound was all that that machine was capable of doing.
Yeah.
But even still, what I think is great about that is that they were still able to make some really compelling, catchy tunes with those kind of basic digitized sounds. And so they explored those possibilities throughout the 80s. And then as the technology grew, the capabilities of the music grew. And so you had a system like the Super Nintendo, which had a more advanced hardware and had more advanced sounds. Mm-hmm. And so you could create almost orchestral sounding textures. You could create something that sounded like strings or something that sounded like brass or woodwinds. And that created a set of video games that the music is kind of coming more to the foreground and becoming one of the most important parts of the game. And as the technology has grown, as these systems have gotten more advanced, mm-hmm. the music has gotten better. It's the instrument, you can actually use live soundtracks on video games now.
Well, and I was going to say that, you know, talking about like the Super Nintendo and things like that, like the music, while it does set the stage and kind of get you just like mentally in the mood, it also signals certain things happening in the game. Like when you get to different parts of Super Mario Brothers, different sounds and different music happen. It's like you're in a dark, creepy part and there's like cheesy, dark, creepy music playing.
Right.
And so it's interesting. It's unlike, say, watching a movie. You may come back to the same music over and over again. So yeah, anyway.
But at the same time, it's also a lot like watching a movie because you have these themes and things that represent certain characters or scenes or moments in a game. You know, like you talk about the scores of John Williams. Those are known for memorable themes and characters have specific themes.
Yeah.
And just like that, that's happened in video games too, especially in the music of Final Fantasy, where the main composer of the series is Nobuo Uematsu, and he composed the music for pretty much the first 9 main titles. And then afterwards, other composers started coming in and he slowly sort of phased out of it. But he created all of these really familiar themes that carry throughout the different games and for each individual game, themes that represent characters or the battles that you get into, and there's a victory fanfare and all this kind of stuff. And so with that, one of the most prevalent themes in the entire series is what's known as the prelude.
Mm-hmm.
The prelude to Final Fantasy is this really simple theme, but it was in the very first Final Fantasy game for the original Nintendo, and it's been in almost every game since.
Oh my god, it's been out for that long?
Yes, 1987.
Which, I gotta say, it's ironic that it's called Final Fantasy, because there have been a lot of them.
Right.
It just keeps happening.
But if we could listen to the prelude. So this is a theme that usually starts at the beginning of a game. It's a prelude, so it takes place before. It's kind of the introduction.
Yeah.
And it's the first thing you hear in the first game. This is an orchestral version. This is the one of the orchestral arrangements that a lot of orchestras do. And you know, it's very simple. It's got this nice arpeggiated line in the harp, and I don't know. To me, it kind of exudes that kind of fantastic, like there's an adventure about to come, and there's all this. You know, it's such a nice simple way. And it's a nice, simple theme that has been carried throughout the different games in the series.
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't have choirs singing this in the original game, but it's the same melody. It's the same kind of melodic figures.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the orchestration. I'm guessing for the original game, orchestration was, you know,
it was little beeps and boops. Yeah, exactly. It was just like that. But one of the things that I think is really interesting about this kind of music is that it actually can sometimes borrow from traditional classical music as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the pieces that there's not really a piece that I can immediately think of that sounds exactly like this piece, but one of the first pieces that comes to mind that might have been an influence on it is Bach's First Prelude from the Well-Tempered Clavier.
Whoa.
So this is a piece that probably most casual classical music listeners know, and it's very simple. It's just these arpeggiated lines, but they create this melodic kind of shape and this harmony that's sort of implied, and the Final Fantasy Prelude's just like that. It's just these rising and falling figures that are basically just simple arpeggios, which are, you know, things that every pianist can do.
Right. Nice. Well, I'm curious too. How did the music grow? And do we eventually find? Are we now today, for example, finding that we actually do have like chamber groups playing the music that people are hearing, or like are we still using synthesizers? Are we like keyboards?
At this point, we pretty much. Well, it depends. I mean, at this point, we have the capability of having recorded musicians play a live soundtrack to a video game. But also, at the same time, if, you know, for instance, it's not in the budget or you're not able to get performers, there are actual programs that kind of take recorded sounds from live musicians, and pretty much you can put them into a sequence and use them to create the illusion that you're listening to a live orchestra or a live choir or something.
Yeah.
These are very realistic sounding synthesizers, basically.
Uh-huh.
And they're used all over the place. They can be used in video games. They can be used in movies.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of composers use them to create demo tracks to kind of as a portfolio to send out to directors and things like that. Basically, either way, you can get realistic sounding music in video games now. And absolutely, the music in Final Fantasy now uses more realistic sounds like this that sound like they're actual instruments being played, whether or not they're live recorded
or just sequenced
instruments.
So what we're listening to right now is not actual people playing music?
Right. It's sort of mimics the sound of actual instruments, and some of these instruments may have been previously recorded, but this putting together, this is not like a session where they're sitting in a studio recording. The composer just has these sounds that he then layered the music into. He layered these notes in, and they just kind of play back, kind of like a synthesizer.
It's robot music. Leslie, how does it look at one of these performances that the symphony does? And I'm wondering too, since we're kind of talking about how the music is utilized in the game and how you can keep coming back to the same music over and over again, how do you structure a symphony performance? I mean, and are we talking about this question's all over the place. Are we talking like full symphony orchestra up there? How do you approach the program for this?
So I worked with the conductor who is kind of the visionary creator, the one who's been doing this for a very long time. His name is Arnie Roth. And he came up with the program and we talked about it. And it will feature all 87 members of the Houston Symphony. There might be little more or less, depending on, you know, how many strings we're using that day. But we're also using members of the Houston Symphony Chorus.
Oh.
So there'll be voices, like you heard in the prelude. They will be live on stage. So what we do is we hang a large screen above the orchestra, and they sync it up with a click track. I believe we're using click track for that. So the conductor and some of the musicians, maybe all of the musicians, it depends on if they like using it or not. They'll have an earbud in that has like a metronome, and it syncs up with the images. And so the conductor is in charge of keeping everyone together and in the right place at the right time.
Uh-huh.
It's fascinating to watch. And when you're sitting in
That's
the audience, a lot of times, for not only these video game shows, but when we do a live film, Mm-hmm. Next weekend, we're doing Raiders of the Lost Ark, full film. So the conductor has a screen, a television screen right in front of them, and they follow what are called streamers and punches. Mm-hmm. So their bars go across the screen that tell you the tempo and where you should be and how many beats are in a measure and that kind of thing. So that not only do they have to follow their score and conduct the orchestra and make it musical and beautiful, they have to sync it up
live. So they're playing a video game while conducting.
Pretty much.
That's crazy.
It's very complicated.
Wow.
But a lot of them find it very fun and entertaining to do and a challenge. So
yeah. Wow, I had no idea that that was going on behind the scenes. Josh, tell us some more about the music. We've heard just the prelude and the Bach sort of potential influence on that. Like, where do we go from there?
Well, there's actually a few other examples from the game series that I think are influenced by Bach and generally early music. So I've got three examples that we can listen to.
Okay.
So the first one is from Final Fantasy VI. This is called Dancing Mad, and this is from the final boss fight in the game, which is it's staggered into four different parts. And so this is the third part of the fight where you're basically the imagery in the fight is that you're starting very low. It's like you're rising up towards the heavens. And so this part, you're just about to break through the clouds and you're fighting this kind of angelic looking creature. And you've got this kind of music here.
Oh, and what game system are we on now?
This would be for Super Nintendo.
Okay.
So this is organ music. You know, this is the kind of stuff that Bach would write. This is the kind of stuff that all kinds of Baroque composers were writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this kind of contrapuntal, you know, nature to it. It's got these multiple lines going. And so there's another piece from Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier that actually is in the same key. It's in C sharp, and it sounds very similar to the section we just heard.
Yeah.
So it's a little faster, it's a little more upbeat, but it's got that same kind of, you know, that kind of pattern that Bach would use all the time in his music. There's another piece. There's a piece from Final Fantasy VII. This is it's kind of an amusement park, and it's this. I like to think of this particular track as like Bach, but in like electronic-y kind of fun techno world.
Uh-huh.
And you'll hear that with the Gold Saucer. That's the name of this one.
Okay. This definitely sounds like video game music.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's perfect for video
game music.
It's
like Japanese Bach.
Right? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, this is especially very Bach-like because it has three different contrapuntal lines doing different things. Uh-huh. And so there's this Bach trio that he wrote for organ that's got three different lines and actually the theme for this Bach piece is very similar to what we just heard in the Gold Saucer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's got that same kind of feel. You've got three different lines and they're, you know, it's kind of a jaunty piece. And so that I think is a very powerful. I feel like Nobuo Uematsu probably listened to this piece before he wrote the Gold Saucer theme. And then the last one in this kind of vein of early music is from Final Fantasy IX. And this is the name of the track is called The Place I'll Return To Someday. This is the very first thing you hear when you load the game and you're at the menu screen.
Okay.
And it's a theme that carries throughout the piece. And this is more like the Renaissance than the Baroque.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fake pan flute going
on.
Yeah,
it's
in
like,
there.
Yeah, recorder, pan flute kind of thing. And I found this piece by Frescobaldi, who was a late Renaissance composer, that's in the same mode as this piece, and he also uses recorders. So it kind of has that same kind of feel.
Yeah.
So
that's wow.
I think there's
crazy.
A pretty clear connection of
Definitely.
Some kind there.
So who are and this can go to you, Leslie. Who are these people who are composing for video games now? Like what composers have you featured? Maybe Josh can comment on
Josh
composers.
May know more about the specific composers,
okay.
But I do know that Mr. Uematsu is known as a rock star. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is, people go nuts for him.
Really?
He has a huge, huge following in the gaming world for sure. Probably our biggest success recently has been The Legend of Zelda.
Koji Kondo's the composer for that series.
I knew you would know that.
So we did two performances last October, I believe it was, and pretty much sold both of them out. People just love that music, and it's been around for 25 or 30 years.
I think the first Zelda game came out in 86.
Okay.
So, yeah,
wow.
About 30 years
30
now.
Years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I remember playing the original when I was a kid, and I had a great time. I think I solved that one, but that was I pretty much stopped playing after that. We also did Pokemon.
Nice.
And we've done some video game compilation shows.
Okay. So. And when you are putting these shows together, as just strictly part of your research, do you spend a lot of time playing the games?
No, I don't. They're actually
the truth comes out, people.
No, and they're mostly packages
okay.
that we just work with the conductor directly
oh, I see.
And make sure that we're not repeating things from the last time.
Okay.
But I do have there are quite a few gamers on staff.
Uh-huh.
So I do some research by asking, "So, what do you think of this game?"
And yeah,
and
so you have in-house experts.
In-house experts for sure.
Nice. Josh, we've got a little more time for some music. Where should we go next?
Well, one of the most interesting classical music connections with Final Fantasy comes in Final Fantasy VI. And anyone who's familiar with that game will remember that there is a pretty lengthy opera sequence in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, without getting into the plot too much, inevitably the characters have to go through this opera as part of kind of this ruse that one of the main characters is in on, and she's basically going undercover as the lead soprano in this opera. And so this opera, it's got Nobuo Uematsu actually wrote several pieces for this opera. He wrote an overture. He wrote this aria. There's a waltz. There's a duel scene, and then there's a big grand finale where you have this fight at the end of the show. So the overture is, I can't think of a specific overture that is like it, but it's so operatic and very dramatic and romantic, and it just, you know, has all of these bombastic hits and there's singing in it, and we can listen to that now and just get a feel for that.
Like completely sounds. I mean, this is just a piece of classical music. This is
right. I mean, obviously, you know, again, this is an orchestrated version, so it's not how it sounded in the original game. But
yeah.
This is the same music. I mean, it's got all these, you know, fake cymbal crashes and all of this, you
right.
know, string stuff and big brassy moments.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. And then there's the aria. which is, you know, very typical. The lead soprano is pouring her heart out to her long lost love, who's away at war, and she's waiting for him to come home to her, mm-hmm. and it's very tender.
About this, it's like video games are like a modern day interactive opera. Yeah. Like it's choose your own adventure
opera.
Whoa,
it totally is, because all the leitmotifs that go through all the games,
right.
yeah.
And this sounds much better than it does in the game, with a fake voice that's not saying any lines. It's just a Super Nintendo sound, but it's a scene that, with a lot of gamers, I think elicits some emotion anyway, just because you're invested in these characters, and the music makes it creates this great scene, and the art decoration of the game itself is really nice. Mm-hmm. But you know, you compare this piece to an aria, famous aria like Costa Diva from Norma by Bellini, and it's, you know, not necessarily completely similar, but they have similar qualities. So it's that typical, you know, pouring out of emotion, and the aria is all about emotion, and it's about the, you know, it's basically kind of a soliloquy where the soprano's singing, or whoever the soloist is singing to themselves about something that they want, or they need something to happen. So it's very much in that kind of vein.
Yeah.
And then after that, there's the waltz.
I like that you're putting Todd to work.
So it's got that typical waltz character. It's in 3/4 time. It's very bouncy. And this is very similar to Tchaikovsky's waltz from Sleeping Beauty. It's not completely the same melody, but it's got the same contour. It sounds very similar, and it's the same kind of, you know, just very light and happy waltz, and it's, you know, it's I think there's definitely an influence there on this one.
Well, and clearly the composer of this music is like very knowledgeable about classical music. It's kind of using influences from all of these different periods and really tying the music for this game to that tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Very purposefully.
Yeah. And there's another, it's sticking with Tchaikovsky, so there's the duel, which happens right after the waltz. This is when these enemy soldiers invade the palace that they're in right now. So there's another Tchaikovsky example. There's a duel scene in his opera Eugene Onegin, which that's a pistol duel, and this duel's more for swords, but it's the same. It's got almost the same kind of orchestral textures. That was the gunshot.
Bang.
And so, yet again, it seems like he was definitely cribbing some things from classical music. And then finally, there's the finale of the opera, which is, it's a weird scene where this villain that you've encountered earlier in the game has kind of foiled your plan, and now you have to fight him off in the midst of this opera, and it completely interrupts the show. So but it's also kind of a comical scene.
Okay.
Thank you. And so...
So you're fighting to the death to this very happy-sounding music.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's a big boss battle to this very light and happy music. And the piece that I think of with this one is it might be a little obscure, but this is Jacques Ibert's Bacchanal.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it sounds kind of similar. It's got that same jaunty feel to it, but also that kind of bouncy, yeah. You know, lots of heavy brass.
Right. You could totally fight to the death to that,
too. Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So, I would want to. That's the music I would select if I were to fight somebody to the death.
I think there's something wrong with you if that engenders in you a violent...
I played this game at a young age, formative years, you know, just kind of, you know...
It
affected me deeply.
I understand. So, Leslie, the performance, the Houston Symphony's performance of Distant Worlds, music from Final Fantasy, is happening on July 23rd. And you can go to the Houston Symphony's website to find out more about that if you would like to attend the concert. And can you please give listeners some hints about what they should be expected to wear to such a performance and how they can really like get into the spirit of this thing.
Yes. So something also very exciting is that we added a matinee performance because we were running out of seats. So we have a 2:30 and a 7:30 performance.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So exciting. I would say, you know, people really like to showcase their favorite characters. Uh-huh. And props are encouraged, I would say. usually we have, you know, photographers running around taking photos, but it's really just a good time for you to come and hang out in the lobby a little bit before the concert and see all your fellow gamers.
See who has the biggest styrofoam sword from Final Fantasy VII.
Yes, but please don't obstruct people's view during the concert.
Yes. Have a good time, but don't get crazy, people. That's what I'm hearing. So Josh, take us out on a good piece of music here.
Okay. Yeah. This one is probably I don't want to say it's the most popular, but it's definitely one of the most popular pieces from the whole series. This is from Final Fantasy VII. This is the music for the final boss fight in the game. It's called One Winged Angel, and I'll let it speak for itself as to why people enjoy this piece so much.
Well, Leslie Sable and Joshua Zinn, thank you so much for being on the Classical Classroom. I really appreciate you guys coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
It's been very cool. All right, listeners, that does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. Check out the veritable cornucopia of social media links on that webpage. You can email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org, and you can subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes. And please do. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Tado Hulslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to Mark DiClaudio for his piercing piazzu eyes. Thanks to Josh Zinn and Leslie Sable for being here once again. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
I guess I don't need to be as close to the microphone as I thought.
That sounds really good right there, just like that. Okay, good.